This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Chris Palmer.
And I think Beats will join us shortly. We're back. We haven't been together for a couple of weeks. We tried last week. We tried last week to do this, but we had technical difficulties, which were horrifying. But we have no technical difficulties tonight, so we're going to talk.
Yet.
One of the things that's been going on, I have a, well, you guys would know this, the NDCA list server. I mean, how many people are actually on that list server? How many people may have know exactly the discussions that have been going on?
I don't know, but if anybody's interested, they can look at it on the website.
I mean, I know it's an open list server. You don't have to be a member of the NDCA to sign up for it.
And a lot of NDCA members are not on it. So it's both ways. There are non-members on it, but also a lot of members are not on it.
Yeah, because I used to get it a long time before I actually started paying my, $25 or whatever to become a member. But anyhow, there has been discussion. I mean, there have been specific issues, but the real discussion is what is the point? What is the objective?
There are 140 members on the list.
Okay. So that's not bad. That's more than I would have thought. So anyway, what is the point of the NDCA? I mean, what is the purpose? What should the organization be doing? And we've talked about this a little bit, trying to distinguish it from some of the other organizations that are out there.
Just to jump in, Lexi Green, I thought, put it very well. She said, is it the Association of National Debate Coaches, or is it a National Association for Debate Coaches, right? I think that was the way she... And the name is actually a little unclear, really, when you think about it. I mean, I think that as a former NDCA board member, I think that the mission statement is pretty clear that it is a national organization for debate coaches, but that is perhaps... Mm-hmm. Evolved, so that's worth.
Well, thinking. I mean, I like the idea of it being that. I mean, an association of national. I mean, I want a national organization. I don't want an organization of people who are on the circuit, which is, I guess, what the alternative is. I mean, that you don't need an organization of people on the circuit because they have TOC already. Not that it's.
Well, is that really true, though?
Okay, I realized even as I
really
said it.
All that function, yeah. I mean, the National Circuit is this entity unto itself, and it faces a lot of serious collective action problems. And so an organization meant to govern it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
But I don't know if NDC – I mean, I probably wouldn't have paid the $25 if I thought that NDCA was that organization. I have nothing against national – well, I have some issues against it personally, but, I mean, in terms of do I think it should exist? This is not sort of what I'm doing. I like the idea of a – we had talked about this, and what we had determined or agreed to that the best thing that NDCA would be was the organization that the people in the organization ran it. And not some oligarchy or some, you know, monarchy, you know, which is the same, what you would say of the other organizations that are out there. But whatever the people wanted, whatever the coaches wanted, that would be what the NDCA would do. Now, the only thing the NDCA does, I think they want to do more, but mostly what they do is the tournament. I mean, if they do other stuff, it's not getting out there. Let's put it that way.
Well, no, that's not entirely true because they do run the open wiki for the policy disclosure and LD disclosure. They run the listserv itself, which is a fairly good service. Vote for the policy topic. You know, they do have a bigger imprint on that, but it does tend to be confined to the policy.
Yeah, board. I'm thinking this. I remember a couple of years ago because Beats was on the committee or he was in office or whatever. And they were talking about doing things like blogs and stuff like that. And they gave me access so I could do a blog or maybe they could take my blog or something. But it seemed like this stuff with LD didn't get off the ground. So even with the disclosures, I mean, how active is the disclosure of LD cases on here after Greenhill? I mean, which is the only place I know that really forces you to do it, so to speak. And
there
after
are
that,
programs that use it extensively, but not tournaments, I think. I mean, we disclose as much as I can get my kids to. And Harvard Westlake is serious.
I know Beast definitely is a big disclosure.
Yeah, and there are a few others out there that use it, but.
But it's like, it's not common, right? I mean, it's not.
No.
Yeah.
It's not universal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so. That's a different question whether it ought to be universal. My real point is that we're not getting any kind of. Real LD business going on here as much as, you know, might be possible.
Well, they face a bit of a chicken and egg problem with that, in that there's not a lot of LD members, and therefore there are not a lot of LD people on the board, which means they have a hard time reaching the LD community, which means there's not a lot of LD members.
So I don't understand why that is true, because, I mean, well, maybe because if it's perceived as being an organization for the circuit, then I can understand it. But, yeah, if it's really intended to be an organization just of coaches...
Well, I think it's more historical than organizational. It was just started by policy people, and policy people know each other better than they know LD people.
But I mean,
not really.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I don't know what kind of services it could offer that aren't necessarily out there already to the LD community. You know, evidence. You know, it's not really the same thing with evidence as it is with policy. I mean, I know that they started it. They tried to do some kind of evidence sharing.
They do. The Open Evidence Project is probably one of the best things the NDCA has done.
But how much? I mean, is there a lot of stuff in there?
Oh, yeah. Tons of stuff. Tons of stuff.
So there is.
A lot of it is
camp files.
A lot of camp files, yeah. And so if you don't go to camp, you can sit at home and you can read what the camps are producing.
Okay, so there is actually, so then there's good LD material there. And I wasn't aware of this. I mean, obviously, I'm sort of moving away, but I didn't really realize this.
Yeah. So you can't get all the benefit of going to camp, but you can certainly approximate.
Well, that's good. I mean, they don't do any PF stuff. I mean, that's just sort of, I mean, aside from having a division, I know they have a division at the tournament, but they're, you know, so it's sort of like policy first.
Well,
because
there's the lesson plans, I guess. I mean, that, right? Like that, there's the sort of general sharing of lesson plans.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, leads that a lot. She's big on those.
Okay. I'm being educated here because I haven't looked at it. I don't think of it as a website, to tell you the truth. I think of it as, you know, I get the listserv stuff and I read the messages, and it never occurs to me that there's a place I could go. Even though, like I said, I worked on this for a short period of time, and I remember when Beats and Maggie were actually, you know, putting this stuff together and soliciting people to do stuff for it. And then I sort of forget about it, you know, I am getting old timers disease, or it's a little telling that we're not getting the message out that the material is there beyond, you know, the circuit or something like that.
Lesson plans are also a more useful piece of material for new coaches rather than experienced ones. So,
well, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at, but for me, PF,
I mean, it's
totally
new to it. Yeah.
So I would love to have some help. You know, where should I start? I mean, I'm thinking this year, I've been realizing that in the last few weeks that I don't know what I should be talking, because the kids have just started doing PF and we're in the middle of the year and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. Yeah, so we're sort of talking about resolutions and stuff, but I mean, not talking about, you know, strategies and tactics. And so I would be very interested in lesson plans. Going forward. You know, so I'll take a look at that. I'd like to have that. Use it. You know, like LD, I just sort of developed it myself over the years, and I have it. Now it's sort of wasted because, first of all, LD isn't what it used to be, so they're worthless lesson plans.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, no, they're good for novices. They're good to get started, but I have nothing to really offer at a higher level, but I just don't have anybody really to develop it with. For me, it's a year-to-year thing because of the tiny team that I'm working with. If I get 10 kids next year, all bets are off, and God knows what'll happen. You know, so that's a different thing. So anyhow, going back to the original thing, so there is this discussion. I don't know how to summarize the discussion, though. I mean, aside from what we've said, should it be national coaches?
Here's my take on it, and I sort of have been following it fairly closely, in that there is a fairly strong core of, I think I'll call it, dissatisfaction or even possible disgruntlement with the structure of how the National Circuit governs itself and runs itself. And one of the focuses of that core is the TOC. And the TOC's mechanical issues and whether or not they hire judges in hospitality and whatever aside, there's a growing belief, particularly among policy coaches, that high school coaches should be in charge of the high school national championship. And as it is now, the TOC is structured as a dictatorship of a college coach who's not in our community, who is advised by but not governed by high school coaches and can basically do whatever the hell she pleases. And she doesn't, but she could. And there is a feeling that basically we could do it better on our own. And that perhaps what we should try to do is encourage the NDCA tournament, which is governed by high school coaches, to become the national circuit championship instead of the TOC. Now, this has been an opinion that's been talked about a great deal, but hasn't really been moved on or acted on. And what happened on the listserv is that a coach basically said, you know, if people are talking about this, they should talk about it openly. And Tim Mahoney, who's the director of the policy half of the NDCA tournament, and in the sake of full disclosure, I'm the director of the other half of the NDCA, the LD, and we're also doing, I'm doing Congress and he's going to do PF. But at any rate, he came forward and was very forthright that he believes that the TOC is not a worthy national championship and that it should move to the NDCA. And he put his money where his mouth is and said that his program, St. Mark's, won't attend the TOC after next year. And they're just exclusively going to be an NDCA team. So the question then is, was this done in a cloak and daggery fashion behind the scenes? And I'm not sure I really buy that, because until something's a formal motion, you know, people can talk to whomever they want.
But I'm going to interrupt.
Let me just finish the timeline. Sure. And then the other question is this something the NDCA should be doing? Are the problems with the TOC that inherent, or are the dangers inherent in having a political organization that is run by high school coaches who are themselves competing for this championship worth the concomitant benefit of us running it on our own? And then that grew into a discussion of the mission overall of the NDCA, and the discussion more petered out than resolved, I believe. I don't think it really reached a conclusion point, but...
Yeah, but I felt that way as I was reading it.
Yeah, it just sort of stopped. Mm-hmm. It didn't actually finish, you know? So, but that was my reading of the history.
Yeah. Well, I was on the board, and I have to say that, this might be controversial, and I apologize to those who are offended, but I was very dissatisfied with the way that this pseudo-discussion happened, because I did feel like it was being held behind closed doors. And I pointed out at the time that I thought it was ironic that we were talking so much about transparency, supposed problems in the TOC, but our own discussion on the board was not transparent, because it wasn't a discussion. It was all very individual emails, and I understand there were supposed to be feelers and whatnot, but it became uncomfortable when I found out that there were people not on the board who already had this discussion being approached by the board. It's just the way it was handled, I think, is unfortunate, because though I think that there are probably a lot of good proposals and whatnot coming from the NDCA about having the NDCA tournament be like the national circuit championship, as much as there's a growing feeling that the high school community should govern its own high school championship, I kind of feel like there's also a long-standing feeling that the NDCA is a clique. That was sort of the impression I had when I first joined it. And one of the reasons I ran for the board in the first place was because I felt like the organization could be a lot more than run a tournament, you know, just the host of a tournament. But, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of rambling. I think the most important thing right now, before anything else happens in terms of trying to displace the TOC, and I guess for the sake of full disclosure, we're going to keep disclosing stuff, I'm on the advisory committee for LD at the TOC. So I've wearing different hats in this whole kind of thing. I think the NDCA really needs to figure out what it is. I don't think it knows what it is. I don't really know what the NDCA is anymore, and I'm a lifetime member of it, and Bronx Science is an institutional member. But sort of punctuating the discussion has been this really interesting series of emails from Eric Fogel, who, for those listeners who don't know Eric, he's a coach at Bronx Law, which is a local competitor of ours. And his team is very much like a local presence kind of team. Almost all the competition they do is on the local and regional circuits. And he's sent out a lot of interesting emails in terms of NDCA possibilities for like a professional organization, which is a term that Jane Boyd has also championed a lot. A term that Terry Tate herself has used many times to describe the NDCA. So they're just, I feel like they're sort of like, not to sound like a debater, but sort of like meta issues that perhaps need to be ironed out as we try to figure out what the NDCA tournament is going to be. I mean, I just want to say as a quick aside, something that I pushed for when I was on the board and that did get adopted was to change the name of the tournament from the NDCA tournament or NDCA championship to the NDCA national championship, as a reflection of aspirations for the tournament to be seen as a national championship. So there's a question of a national championship versus the national championship, which I guess is sort of the central issue with its relationship to the TOC. That was a long ramble. Sorry about that.
Well, Well, that's okay. But I now I reserve the right to pick a fight with you about that.
Sure, absolutely.
So Cruz, you ignorant slut.
Again, yes.
Yeah, well, we try. But I'd actually say that the first bit of that reflects a common and widespread misunderstanding of what transparency is.
Okay.
The function of a board is to govern an organization. And transparency, when you talk about nonprofit governance, doesn't have anything to do with discussions. What it has to do with is openness about action. And so until the NDCA board takes action and puts forward a proposal to take some sort of action, I don't know, against the TOC or change their tournament somehow, then they have the perfect right to talk to whomever and whenever they please.
Just want to say I don't disagree that they have the right to do that. Yeah, so maybe the word transparency is wrong, but I stand by
that. Nor do I think that they necessarily have an obligation to, because you're in a situation where they're trying to move from one competitive tournament to another. And as we've talked about,
what do you mean by they? So do we mean they as coaches or they as board members?
Both. Okay. And that therein lies the problem, because if you have a first mover problem here, if one team or one coach is revealed to be the one who is trying to destroy the TOC, but the TOC is still the national championship, does the TOC therefore, as we've established as a dictatorship, turn around and screw them over? And I think one of the reasons why they think that the TOC should be abandoned is exactly because that kind of thing is perceived to be possible. You know, the TOC can turn around and if they host a tournament that they rely on for fundraising, strip away their bid and therefore a lot of their draw. And there is nothing in the TOC guidelines or bylaws or any such thing to prevent that from occurring. So they're in a position where they want to take this action, but they also have dual loyalties between the NDCA and their own programs and their own teams. And that can be a very hard line to walk. And given that, I don't think it's at all, until there's an actual proposal, until there's action on the table, and there was no such action, still hasn't been any such action, I don't think they're under any obligation to talk to anybody. You know, they can talk to their friends about it however they want to. And you know, that does not impinge upon them as an organization or as a board or as corporate officers. What matters then is if they're going around having meetings and passing motions and taking.
But what about the story about like letters being circulated? I mean, I don't know if that's true.
That's just talking. That's just talking.
Yeah, I mean, I have to go with this. I mean, we did certain things. There's a few of us that see each other all the time. We talk about stuff, and a lot of it is the business of running tournaments and making decisions. And if you look about like what we did with the Modest Novice topic, we had a lot of talk about this thing. So one could say we're talking, you know, but it wasn't public. It was all.
What about? Okay, wait a second.
No, it became public as we went further along.
I just disagree with the characterization here. What about the state? How we oppose the NYSFL through public letters and through public
eventually. The first discussions were not public. I guarantee you they weren't.
The first discussions
about Modest Novice was me emailing Jim and saying, good idea.
We were talking about this behind so-called closed doors.
You can't really say halfway through the process you're not being transparent enough when you haven't even finished the process. You know what I mean?
But this process has been – okay, I'm going to now quote – like Cheryl Kaczmarek was involved with the NDCA back in the 90s and people were talking about this then behind closed doors. So like –
But what are these closed doors? I mean, it's just the people that are in there. That there's a handful of people that run stuff, and they're having a talk. Where's the closed door? Who are they closing the door against? I mean, it's like
until they take action as a board behind closed doors, I don't think they're hurting anybody.
I mean, I sat at Columbia all weekend. We talked about all kinds of stuff.
I guess we're just going to have to disagree on this, but I think that it undermines the goal if people feel distrust towards the organization.
Well, that's a different issue.
It's pretty clear before. Okay, I understand that you disagree with the point that I'm trying to make, but it's also pretty clear that a lot of people agree with the point that I'm trying to make, which indicates that somebody on some level is going to have to make a decision about how should this process be conducted and go forward.
Well, that's the question I have, though, is from whence does that distrust spring?
Like, yeah, it's why a question of the distrust itself.
And there are a lot of conversations out there that happen about ideas that I'm not
I think a better point is that the organization.
I want to answer Chris's point first. I can tell you exactly where it comes from. From a point you brought up earlier, which is the fear that naturally comes with the idea that when you have a national championship and the people running the national championship are in the line for the national championship. There is a fear that comes with that. I think that's very natural.
That's a legitimate issue, but that has nothing to do with them talking about the proposal to their own friends before they bringing it up as a formal.
I guess here lies the problem. We're a very small community. So the idea of who is a friend and what is elite and what is who has power and doesn't, there's a lot of overlap. And I like all the people on the. I mean, I served on the NDCA board, so I'm not. It's not like I'm innocent here. Nor am I saying that anybody here has a terrible motive, because I don't think that they do. I mean, I respect all these people's coaches, and I think that whether people agree or disagree over what some people want to do with the NDCA championship shouldn't have a reflect. I mean, I certainly don't think that anyone has bad motives. What I question is just the means through which the discussion is happening. It's a little awkward that a bid system was rolled out that clearly mirrored the TOC bid system when people knew these discussions were happening, but not in any formal way. I mean, that kind of stuff is awkward. It is.
See, I don't see it. I think of this as the way things get done. I mean, I
did not have that response either.
When I have an idea.
Other people did. That's why.
I know, and I think they're full of shit too, so that's fine. But
there goes the explicit tag.
No. I'm baiting you, Cruz. It's how I show I care. So the thing is that's how things get done. You know, when I have an idea of the way I want debate to be or whatever, the first thing I do not do is to propose it to the NFL or whoever the governing body of whoever it should be. Like when I was running Yale and I wanted to change something about Yale, I did not email out every single bloody coach who's gone to Yale in the last 5 years about my idea. What I did is I asked Jim, or I asked Chavez, or I asked you, or I asked Bob, and I bounced it off the people that I trust and the people that I know. And then when I was ready and I felt it was relatively well-baked, then I brought it out to the public, and then I proposed it as a thing. And then it could receive the wider scrutiny once I've already gone through that first part. So let me ask, that's exactly what happened here.
Can I just ask one question here? And feel free to answer this with a brief answer if you want or not. But do you honestly feel that a change at Bump, a change at the New York City Invitational, a change at Lexington, a change at Yale is the equivalent of fundamentally changing what is perceived as the National Circuit Championship? You feel that those are the equivalent
they are
issues?
Equivalent, but they're not. I don't see what the qualitative differences between them are that makes the process any different. Because, you know, for instance, when I was on the board of the, I was president of the board of the Massachusetts State League, right?
Okay.
When there'd be a new idea, there would be the people I talked to first about ideas, but then it was incumbent upon me to propose the ideas to the entire board and by extension the entire league in such a way that everybody got a chance to weigh in eventually. But that put me under no obligation to make sure they got way in from the ground floor, right? And so that's what I'm seeing here is they started on the ground floor by having private conversations, as is their right. And then when they were ready to make a public – when Tim Mahoney was ready to make a public proposal, he did so. And it got hashed out, and therefore the issue was brought into the open. You know? I don't see where there's an agenda here.
I mean, I think that
there's two different things going on here.
There's an agenda, but I don't see the point where I, as a schlub member of the NDCA, as I was at the time, and even now, I'm not on the board.
I'm a schlub member.
Yeah, the point where Jim Menick, as a schlub member of the NDCA, has the right to weigh in is when the proposal is made, not when the proposal is being crafted. We don't have any particular right to say. I did not get the impression.
Okay, I'm a perfect example because I'm absolute schlub because I have no connection. You know, I mean I did tab it obviously, but I mean real no connection to the border. I have no idea what's going on. So all of a sudden I see this stuff, and my first reaction is, okay, what do I think about this? Is not, oh my God, there's a cabal. You know, I mean, it's like but on the other hand, and I just saw this in another thread that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but there is a presumption of cabal very, very often, only because I think people naturally like to have presumptions of cabals. I mean, it's just like, there's all the stuff going on behind closed doors, and it's really not. I mean,
Northeast, we're the cabal.
We're a cabal, but. we can't open our prison
all the time, and then they fling it at us, and then when we're asking around to see who else will open tab, nobody's to be found. So that's how cabals
form. But I mean, we're a cabal, but we're a cabal with a podcast. You know, you and I both have blogs.
A cabal with a podcast.
I mean, seriously. I mean, what is it that we're not talking about? That we're not open about? I mean, you're right though, Chris. I mean, you open the door to tab, and everybody goes running in the other direction. Nobody really wants to do it.
Let me just backtrack for a second. You're touching upon a really important point here. There is this perception or presumption or whatever you want to call it of cabal, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cabalism.
Yes.
I don't even know what to call this. So,
Kabbalah.
Let's talk about that. Right? That's what I keep wanting to say. Let's talk about this. Because I think that this is. There are two issues here that I think are complicating my feelings here. And I'm not – if I sound heated, it's only because I feel passionately about the NDCA being a good organization, because I think it is a very good organization. So there are two issues here that I think – that I hope – and I say this as a former board member, okay? And for the sake of full disclosure, I wasn't reelected. So
if he fully discloses one more thing, I'm ending the podcast.
Chris used that phrase too. You. Okay, listen. This is a serious point. Okay, now, jokes aside, this is a serious point. There are two issues going on here. One thing is that it is clear from the from a number of emails, okay, that there are some members who genuinely do not see the NDCA's primary mission or mission at all as hosting a TOC-like tournament. That's important. So I want to say that is an important point. Those voices need to be considered. And I have a bad feeling that they're not going to be that strongly considered. Not because anyone on the NDCA board, it's like an evil cabal, not because of anything like that, but because there's a huge identity crisis in the NDCA. And if you really look over the members, the majority of the members are national circuit debate coaches. I mean, they just are. The people who are active in the NDCA are circuit coaches, right? And I'm not saying it's a bad or good or bad thing. It's just that.
But that's not necessarily limited, that it doesn't always have to be that way. I'm looking at it from a different perspective altogether.
If the NDCA chooses to host the new TOC, I think I'm.
Then I agree with you.
And it seems that there's a decent enough percentage of the leadership and membership of the NDCA. I perceive. I could be wrong, and Chris probably point out correctly so that there has not been a formal motion or vote, and that's true. But the NDCA, I think, needs to figure out this kind of stuff, because if you really look at the if we're going to talk about like nonprofit status and like organizational stuff, like the mission statement of the NDCA seems to me to not be about a TOC like tournament at all. And this was actually brought up a couple of times when I was on the board, and I thought it was a healthy and good discussion, but it never really got fleshed out. I feel like that's a discussion that really has to happen first. And I guess the related thing, and this is why I brought up the thing with the bids, is it's interesting that you said that you didn't see it as a TOC challenge, because the moment I read it, I admit I did. And not just because I was on the board, but because even before I was on the board, I knew that that idea had been floated. And I took the email, and this is not a criticism of Tim, because I think Tim has got to be one of the most dedicated tournament directors I've ever seen. And I have great respect for what he does at the NDCA tournament. But I actually perceived that email and read that email to be a provocative email. It was almost as if it was baiting the discussion about TOC versus NDCA, because more than any, it was the most direct TOC style related thing I'd ever seen come from the NDCA tournament.
I wasn't surprised
to see the response that
I read it as that too, but you can't simultaneously complain that he's doing things behind closed doors he's being too direct about raising the issue.
I think I can, because I think I could say that's interesting. Well, you know what?
The point is that by saying y'all were doing this behind closed doors and now we get this proposal, what you're essentially saying is that Tim Mahoney as an individual does not have the right to craft a proposal on his own timeline. That's what that assertion is. It's saying that he as a person cannot go out there, come up with an idea with the people he chooses to talk about it with, put it together, and propose it on his own time.
But I guess
he has to somehow follow somebody else's timeline about that. And I don't agree. I don't think that's how that works.
I guess
put a proposal out there publicly. It was discussed publicly. And what does it matter what the run-up was?
Well, I guess I'll answer that in two parts, which is that it is hard to separate all of us as people versus jobs. This is a problem in the real world as well, that when it's a tournament director or a board member or the director of forensics at something, you know, like it is difficult to separate one thing from another. So I don't know. It's like if somebody's the tournament director of the organization that we pay dues to and whatnot, it's hard for me to separate his role as the tournament director of the NDCA championship versus him as an individual versus a coach. I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding
what you're saying. Why does that matter, though? No, what I'm saying is, if everything you say is true factually, and I have no reason to suspect it isn't, and I have much reason to suspect it is, that there's been a core of people to talk who have been talking about overthrowing, quote-unquote, the TOC for years and years and years, and that there's a critical mass of such people on the NDCA board, and they've essentially been talking about this exclusively with their friends and their loved ones or whoever, right?
I have to interrupt. I don't know. Sure. I just want to be very clear about this, and I do not – this is not to be cheeky or anything like that. There really was never a direct open discussion about this when I was on the board. That could have changed afterwards. So I actually really don't know if there's a critical mass of people or not. That's important. I just want to make that very clear to whoever.
But even were there one, right, or whatever, you know, if that were all true, right, then why were they under an obligation to reveal this fact earlier than now? And why were they under an obligation to take an input about it when they were obviously not in a position yet to move on it? Until they're ready to move, until they're ready to take a concrete action, it's all just speculation and idle chit-chat. And you can't really put people under any sort of obligation, be it perceptually or even, you know, mechanical, to have chit-chat with anybody. You know? They could have talked about it for 6 months and then decided for one reason or another, oh, it's a bad idea, and never proposed it at all.
I don't know what to say other than something strikes me as wrong in an organization that doesn't seem to know what it is at the moment. I feel like that discussion has to happen before what the tournament's going to be and whatnot. I like Lexi's way of putting it.
Didn't he in proposing to start that discussion?
I don't know if he intentionally started that discussion. Oh. I think Michael Antonucci started that discussion.
I'm not so sure. I mean, as you said, I read that proposal as pretty provocative and directly aimed at the TOC too. And I don't think I don't think Tim was unaware of that.
But we're talking about two separate discussions, Chris, because one discussion is should the NDCA displace the TOC, and the other discussion is that the business of the NDCA in the first place. And so my point is,
I don't think those are separate at all.
I don't. I think they're related, but I don't know that. I'm not Tim's mind reader, and I would love to have Tim as a guest on here. Actually,
that'd be a great idea.
But I don't know that. I'm just going to say this. And this is a provocative comment, and so I'm bracketing as a provocative comment. The people who are in support of the NDCA displacing the TOC, I don't know, in my own experience of idle chit chat with them, how many of those people have given a lot of thought to what the mission of the NDCA is. I think it's a given to some of these people that the NDCA is in fact the Association of National Debate Coaches, as opposed to a national association for all debate coaches. That's my opinion. That's very controversial. I realize that.
Well, that makes. I mean, there is a logic to that. Whether
they
want it or
not,
they are
all national debate coaches themselves.
I mean, there is an organization called the NFL, which is theoretically the organization for all debate coaches, except for two out of three on this particular call. But there is a general organization. So the idea and TOC is no organization at all. TOC is
Chris
nothing but a
more
fundraiser.
Than enough NFL degrees to make up for the two of us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, TOC doesn't count as an organization in any way, shape, or form.
Well, that actually leads to another question I had, which is, what is it that makes the TOC the national championship exactly?
Sure, there's another great question.
There's no action the NDCA could take that declares themselves the national championship. The championship is just simply a function of what the attendees accord it, right?
And a lot of people don't go to those tournaments and think the CFL or the NFL are the national championship.
When I was in high school, my school was not a member of the NFL, and the idea my coach was against the TOC. So the NCFL to us was functionally the championship.
Right. Which is fine.
And so the thing that makes the TOC is simply the fact that everybody goes to it in this group.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of weird to talk about what the NDCA should or should not do, because the NDCA runs a tournament. That's an established reality.
Sure.
And the thing that would turn that into a national championship is not any particular action of the board, but simply an agreement among coaches and a collective agreement to treat it as such.
But that's how TOC it became what it is. I mean, exactly the same process.
There's no other thing the NDCA can really do to make that occur, right? So in my mind, actually, there's not really much the NDCA itself should or could do towards that end except run a really good tournament and wait. And the decision, from what I understand, is more on the level of individual coaches deciding to go to the NDCA and not the TOC. And the reason you have to go to not the TOC is because as long as everybody goes to both in that group, then that just means that people who can only go to one will go to the TOC.
Agreed.
The real incentive comes into play when the NDCA has things that the TOC doesn't. And if the people who supported it, more to the point, higher judging.
Sorry, no, that was really good. Okay.
I think higher judging would be my first request. Coffee would be the second, however. But trophies that cost more than $25 a piece would be nice too. But, you know, anyway, let's not be catty. Why did I say that among this group of people? I don't know. But the thing that makes the TOC is simply that everybody goes to it. And if everybody doesn't go to it anymore, then it's not going to be the TOC. So to some degree, it's only a movement among private coaches acting as coaches that could ever turn it around. Mm. And what you need is 10 or 12 or 15 directors of large programs to say, yeah, TOC is nice. It's just not what we do anymore.
Sure.
And then everybody else follows.
Mm. I mean, if
my suspicion is in policy, they have that consensus. You know, from my reading of the policy.
What do you mean by that consensus? Just so I can.
I think that they have a critical mass of people who are willing to make that jump. And I don't know that for a fact, and this is based on a reading from the policy world at arm's length. Our program has policy, but I don't coach it directly. But my reading is that they do actually have the critical mass they would need of people who are willing to jump to the NDCA and ignore the TOC.
And why would they do that, though?
However,
I mean, what would be their...
Well, for a lot of reasons. Lexington, Kentucky is very hard to get to. It's expensive. It's in a bad weekend because of the APs and various other things. It's often the weekend of the Derby, which makes it even more expensive. They don't provide any higher judging. They don't provide any hospitality. It's more or less an entirely a fundraising apparatus solely for their debate team. They're willing to take actions to improve it, but they haven't demonstrated willingness to take actions that directly impinge their bottom line, which is a complaint I've had about the Harvard tournament for years, too. And the bid system is viewed as corrupt. You know, they're viewed as supporting tournaments at bid levels because of personal relationships among coaches and them, rather than the actual quality of the tournament underlying that. And, you know, you can make a great tournament. You can make a tournament be a lot more profitable than it was by just dropping an Octos bid on it out of the blue. And people will go just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these things all together just produce an irritation that the policy community has, I think, fairly well decided that they can do better with the NDCA, which is a not-for-profit tournament. They plow all the profits, the proceeds back into the tournament. The board doesn't take any money out of it. They hire judges. You know, they do a lot of things that the TOC doesn't. However, what I also think is holding them back is that they don't have us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the policy community, if they felt they could survive without the LD community on their own, would have jumped by now. And the thing that's keeping them from jumping is that the LD community isn't ready to throw in with the NDCA yet because we don't view it as an LD or even a debate-wide organization. We view it as a policy organization. And so there's no particular reason why the LDers would necessarily abandon the TOC in favor of the NDCA. And if policy jumped in and LD didn't, that would put a lot of programs in a really awkward position, you know, including ours. So what they're hung up with now is, will the LDers follow? And if, you know, if that answer is no now, how can they turn that answer into yes? And I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, what you're saying is there are like inherent issues about having the TOC being what it is, because I mean, first of all, an NDCA travels around, so it's going to be here, it's going to be there, which is very nice. I mean, sometimes you don't have to get on a plane.
And they also factor cost into where they put it too. You know,
Lexington is like impossible to get to. Yeah. I mean, it's not an easy place, so it's not like it's a major city that you have a lot of flights. So it's expensive. And not to forget the tournament itself. I mean, it's just expensive to get there, hard to get to kind of thing. So, I mean, you know, any kind of national tournament, I mean, let's face it, all the real national tournaments do in fact move around. CFL moves around, NFL moves around, and there's a reason for that based on the fact that they want to make it accessible. A lot of it's just where you have the space, you know. But
there's also a matter of size and scale. I mean, the PFC is a minuscule tournament.
Yeah, you could do that at NHUD for God's sakes, for all practical purposes.
I mean, TOC is 70 some odd entries in each division. Yeah. But I mean, the NCFL has single events that are bigger than that.
Yeah, and this is a small I mean, TOC is a tiny tournament when you think about it. I mean, every week we do bigger tournaments than that. So it's not, for all the vaunted discussion about it's the easiest tournament in the universe to do because the numbers are just right. You know, you press the button and then you got a round and then you go get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, TOC is virtually the same size as NHUD.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is not a hard tournament in terms of that aspect of it, the practical running of the tournament. So, yeah, so anyhow, location is really good. I mean, some of the stuff, I mean, in terms of establishing bids and all this sort of stuff and whether or not the decision of who gets a bid or who doesn't get a bid is corrupt, becomes like unless you have some way of doing it that is entirely mathematically determined, okay, an Octo's bid will be this or an Octo's bid won't be this or something like that, and then it starts to get very, very complicated. Right. I don't know how you build a good system.
And that's what the NDCA has, and that's what Tim Mahoney was proposing, to replace the current system with another system which was ostensibly also mathematical.
Yeah, I mean, but a mathematical system makes complex. I mean, part of it is, I mean, you know, like, okay, a tournament that's really, really big would theoretically get a lot of bids somehow, but big doesn't mean it's good, and a tournament this small doesn't mean it shouldn't get more bids. And we've had other discussions where just all colleges should not get bids.
So tournaments that are really, really big don't necessarily get bids at all. A lot of parts of the country have really, really big tournaments I've never seen.
That's true.
And I can think of tons of tournaments in Texas that probably, by just by numbers standards,
sure did. Exactly.
But they just have a lot of one day tournaments too.
Also. No, they've got a lot of 2 day tournaments too.
But never any 3 days.
That's true. No blue law violation. Yeah, but like they've got a lot.
They have enormous tournaments. Yeah, I mean the University of Texas tournament is gargantuan size. It's just that would be the biggest draw in the world. But it's only
Yeah, so you have to somehow sort all this up.
But I think part of the formula the NDCA does is it has a geographical element too. So how many states you pull or something like that is also an element.
States should have some.
So 4,000 Texans isn't going to get you anywhere. It's not going
to tell that to the 4,000 Texans. But in terms of corruptness, I mean, I won't argue that the TOC group is or isn't corrupt, but I think any group is going to be equally or not equally corrupt by whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's just this too political because everybody is sooner or later at some point going to be trying to protect their interests.
Yeah, and the challenge is always to find the disinterested person. The TOC leadership is not disinterested because they're interested in making a profit. But the NDCA leadership is also not disinterested in that they would be the ones competing in the tournament that they're running.
Right. And so, let's just be fair to the TOC for 1 second. I just want to say one thing about the TOC that's going unmentioned in this, and I do not disagree that the TOC wants to make a profit, so just to be clear. I do think that it should be noted that Andrea Reed, who is still the relatively new director of the TOC.
Yeah, this will be her third, right?
That's right, yes. Yeah. Has trying to do a number of things to lower the prices. And
they cut fees.
I'm not saying that it's enough or whatever, but I feel like that should be noted. The other thing that I just wanted to mention from before, and this is like now less heated, so I don't want to reheat the discussion, but I forgot to mention one thing, which is just to sort of answer an earlier point. I think a reason why I've been uncomfortable with all this is that there's something, and I'm not saying that this is intentional, because I really don't think it is at all, actually. I think it's just a matter of practicality. But to me, there's something mean about it, because I feel like this has been brewing for a long time. Nobody was doing it when JW was around, because nobody wants to offend JW. And then you got Andrea Reed, who is close to me in age and whatnot. And I know from when I took over Bronx Science how tough it was to suddenly have to deal with a community of, in my case, alumni, in her case, the whole debate community and whatnot. I know that that's a challenging position, and something about it just makes me, I'm just being honest, it makes me uncomfortable. It's sort of like, this goes back to a discussion I once had with Jim Menick that he probably doesn't even remember, in the Tab Room of Scarsdale, when I was trying to push him hard on why he would not support Hillary Clinton. And at the end of the day, he said, because I was a big Hillary Clinton partisan. I almost said for the sake of full disclosure. I was a big Hillary Clinton partisan. And I kept outlining all these things to Jim about her liberal positions that I loved and all these policy proposals. And Jim at one point said, I just don't like her. She just gives me a reaction I don't like. So the point I'm trying to make is that on some gut level, something about this just makes me uncomfortable. I'm just being honest, and I can't really – I know that's not a satisfactory answer.
Well, no, I mean that's not unfair because – I mean you all know the story of the former president of Harvard, Larry Summers, and how he said some could-be-interpreted-poorly-could-be-interpreted-better remarks about women in science and at a speech. And it ended a year and a half or so later afterwards with him being, you know, more or less forced to resign his position. Now, the story in the public view was that he said some things about women in science and then that the faculty went after him for it and therefore, you know, he got fired or whatever. But the unspoken story is that Larry Summers had no friends on campus whatsoever. And the governing factor there wasn't that he himself had said these things about women in science. It's right. that when the faculty had an opportunity to get together and talk about him, they all discovered they all hated him. And before it was like the English department said, oh, well, we think he's a towering asshole, but the science people love him. And the science department was like, oh, well, we think he's awful, but the social science folks love him. And then the social science folks were like, oh, he's absolutely miserable, but the humanities folks seem to get along with him fine. And they never compared notes. And so what the remark about the women in sciences did wasn't so much establish that they didn't like him, but it made them compare with each other and talk to each other about him. So what you saw was not a direct result of what he said, but instead was the result of all of the things he had done to piss off everybody on campus up until that point. And even the person who first proposed a no-confidence motion against him in the faculty meeting didn't think it was going to pass, and it passed by like 60% or something like that. I think that might be a similar thing here. Everybody's kind of hated the TOC for a while, but with a new director in place, what happened was people actually started talking about it and started comparing notes about it. And so she may be the catalyst, but I don't think she's the cause.
Yeah, I mean, she just happened to be in there. But a lot of it's also there's a generational change, too. When I first started going there, all these people have since retired or, you know, whatever. And so the people that – and talk about old boy networks kind of thing. So all the decisions were being made, and I think there's been very good effort, actually, to not have that happen in the TOC and to bring young people and so forth and so on to decision-making.
Andrea deserves credit for that.
But even before Andrea, I think this was going on. But nonetheless, it had been established, and... You know, it was a little crusty. I mean, so when they have the big lunch that everybody goes out and they spend all the profits on, I mean, that big lunch was nothing but people that were, everybody there was 75 years old and drunk as a skunk and didn't even have teams anymore, you know, and they were all, you know, I mean, that to me was really offensive, if you want to know the truth, that I was spending money for like large bids, and if I didn't get it, it was going to buy liquor for some of these old drunks. You know,
it was still going if you didn't get it too. So,
yeah, I mean, this is too. You know? Yeah, then you had to like pay an entry fee on top of this. This is outrageous. You know, I mean, it's one thing if the money is at least going to their debate team. You know, but I mean, and we're talking, you know, like 50 people, 100 people, whatever, going out to lunch. Give me a break. And this is not, you know, so. This is not what you do in these things, you know. It's like,
yes. I know what to say to that.
I know, John, you like the lunch, you know, but
you worked yourself all the way into an income.
I hope my boss isn't listening to this. That sounds like I'm very, I conduct myself very maturely at the TOC.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you are not universal in that.
That is very true.
But... Yeah, I wish all were the same, but they are.
But I mean, this is going to be true of any organization that is run in such a way that, I mean, remember, this organization was run by the whim of Patterson, who got his buddies together, which is very, I would do exactly the same thing. There's no moral issue here. So he got his friends, and they put together this tournament, and they were very satisfied with the results, and... Yep.
But it becomes more responsive to the national community than the NFL or the CFL were.
Yeah, and the thing is, it becomes encrusted, and you have these little advisory boards, and he picks and he does what he wants to do and everything, and it's going to get removed. So if the NDCA wants to avoid that, they have to have, and the transparency, I agree with Chris, the transparency is not what, John, what you're saying, which is like every discussion has to be out in the open, but all the decision-making processes have to be open, and the ability to be one of the decision-makers has to be available to anybody. So
I just want to be very clear about this. I mean, I guess I'm using the word transparency in the wrong way. Yes, I understand what the meaning of transparency is. I guess to me, there's something very fundamental about this discussion that it just throws me off that it was not more open. We're not going to agree on this, and I respect that totally. But I feel like this is sort of like.
I don't know how to put it. I'd have the same reaction if I didn't feel like it still could be open, you know? Like if they just suddenly picked up and left the TOC and whatever value of they you want, the magical they, you know, the ones who say that things like they say that there's not going to be around 7. But anyway, if they all magically picked up and abandoned the TOC wholesale and all went to the NDCA without saying a word about it, then I would exactly agree with you. But I don't think they've done that yet, and so I don't see, you know what I mean?
I understand what you mean.
Yeah. And the fact is as I was saying before, they could, because this is really a decision of a coach rather than a board to abandon one tournament in favor of another. And nothing, you know, Tim Mahoney had no obligation to go out there and put himself in the line and say St. Mark's will not attend the TOC anymore after whatever date he picked.
And like I said, I mean, I think Tim is clearly very dedicated to the NDCA championship or national championship.
Just we never really assessed. What is Tim's role in the NDCA?
Tim is the tournament director for, presuming that this motion passes, which is not controversial, he is tournament director for policy and public forum.
Okay, so he's not like the president of this or something.
No,
like
that. And actually, I am tournament director of Lincoln Douglas and Congress.
And again,
assuming this motion, well, I'm already LD and he's already policy, but then there's a motion to deal with the other two events. But
I just want to say that one of my biggest complaints, actually, and I was pretty open about this, so I don't think this will come as a surprise to Tim or anyone else, but when I was on the board, I was pretty unhappy with the idea that the tournament director was. There just was no real discussion, frankly, of whether, like, what the deal was with the tournament director. It's just like, Tim is doing a great job, let's appoint him, et cetera. Which, to go back to Jim's earlier points, like, there's always a natural tendency for the people in power to, you know, either become entrenched or just like things that you might not want to happen will happen even when there are checks against it. So I actually have to say that I really think it is good that Tim quickly agreed to the idea of having an elected tournament director. That actually was my biggest complaint about the NDCA tournament as a tournament, is that I was uncomfortable with the idea that it would be the de facto national championship, but that if the whole argument is about the community control, that to me should be an elected board member position, not like an ex officio kind of thing.
Well, and also to be clear, neither of us is a board member.
Right. Exactly.
We're what's called an officer of the organization, in that we have delegated powers from the board, and our duty is to implement the decisions of the board. And we're sort of, I've discovered, are sort of included in board discussions by grace, but we're not voting, and we're not, you know, we can't make proposals directly or anything like that. The structure of it is that we're responsible for putting together the tournament and implementing it, but we do not actually tab it ourselves even.
Right.
That's even one more step at arm's length. And we're responsible for finding the people who tab and setting them up with the sort of data and the general guidelines of where it wants to be and make it happen. But don't drive directly.
So. All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been going for a long time.
That was a good discussion.
A lot of heat. I mean, for the sake of full disclosure.
Before we finish, though, I'm usually a big guy about sort of transparency and accountability, but I'm actually not entirely sure that an elected tournament director is such a good idea.
Okay.
I don't know, because the idea that a tournament director would be thinking, oh, well, X is the right thing to do, but it will piss off these people who control this much voting block, so I really shouldn't do it because I'll lose my next election. I don't know. I mean, my ideal for a tournament director is actually the other end, which is like the Supreme Court, right? Which is supposedly a nonpartisan, nonpolitical, from the process itself. You know, the ideal tournament director in my mind is either somebody whose kids aren't directly competing in that division.
I agree.
Which is hard to find. Or somebody who's retired and willing to stick around for a couple of years, which is also hard to find. So logically, that's not necessarily easy to do, but you want to have somebody who has both a degree of accountability, but also a fair degree of independence too, you know? So, I have to think about that one.
I'm going to say this about it.
But say I don't like it. I kind of
agree with everything that you're saying. I think the big reason why I'm in favor of an elected position for this specifically is if – how to put it? The TOC in many people's minds is J.W. Patterson.
Yeah.
I think for many people, the NDCA championships is Tim Mahoney. And I think that if the tournament is going to grow beyond that and grow to be the – if it wants to be the national circuit championship, and one of the key arguments against – supposedly against the TOC is this like dictatorship argument. Even though Tim is not the dictator, I think in some people's eyes he is the dictator because he's just associated with it. I think it's probably good for the tournament, even if it means Tim being elected, which by the way I think is exactly what's going to happen, and probably rightfully so. Like I said, he's dedicated himself pretty hugely to the tournament and done very well with it. I still think it's good. I think it's good for the organization, for the tournament. That's my opinion.
Here's where I doubt. I don't disagree. I doubt. I haven't really reached. What I think is that elections and nonprofit organizations tend to heavily favor incumbents because usually in a nonprofit organization, there's a large mass of people who aren't very well plugged into the politics and aren't plugged into the details of that organization. And then there's a small group of people who are very plugged in and know exactly what's going on. And so when you run an election for a position like that, you usually get the person who's in there just comes back automatically, whether or not they're actually worthy of it. And so I think what you do is if you elect the tournament director, suddenly the tournament director has more power, not less, because the tournament director just needs to secure enough support and name recognition among the people who are not familiar with the process intimately, and they are no longer accountable to the board, right? The board can't remove them. And the board would know better than anybody how well they're doing and whether or not they're pulling shit behind the scenes and all that stuff.
What about a model like the U.S. Senate? The board nominates somebody and the membership confirms. Like the Senate gets advice and consent.
My thought of the advice and consent is elect different board members. You know? Like the membership ultimately has control through the board of anything they want to. And so if there's that much angst about a tournament director, you can just simply elect board members who will get rid of the tournament director. But I think a smaller group of people who works intimately with somebody is in a much better position to evaluate how good work they do rather than a large group of people who may or may not be plugged in.
I think all this still connects to the basic point that I was making before about the organization needs to figure out what it is. If the organization is the host of the national championship, then actually I do think the tournament director should be elected by the people. That I guess is just my feeling.
I suspect that would be – that would push us closer to the model of J.W. Patterson, not further away the way it should be. You know? Because I think an empowered board is more important in that position. But I haven't thought that well all the way through. So I don't know that I believe that. I just suspect that I do. That makes sense?
Okay. That makes sense. I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Now can I go to sleep? Past my bedtime.
He who complains that we haven't recorded. This is probably one of the best episodes we've ever recorded,
nope,
right?
We're petering out.
Cruz versus Palmer violence, right? We had.
Still friends. Like, isn't that?
No, I'm not.
No, we're not.
Screw you. All right. On that note,
next time I see you.
Yeah, I'm vetoing you.
When are you flying to Emory, John?
Tomorrow night, and we are staying through Monday.
Ah, so are we, actually. Same time.
We're going to go to the Coca-Cola Museum. I'm so excited.
We're going to the Woodfire Grill. Screw you.
Before we sign off, I just want to say this is the annual time where I give thanks to Tim Averill for introducing me to Fat Matt's, which is, in my opinion, the greatest rib shack on earth.
It's funny because you talk about that. Whenever you say that, I think of Matt Dene and Matt Ross, who are the skinniest, too. Yes. Like, just
I'll put them together.
Matt Ross turned sideways. You don't see him anymore.
Yes.
Yeah, Well, you guys have fun in Atlanta. I'll be up here running an MHL, you know, right, with the salt of the earth, and you'll be down there with your little keys. And
oh, I ain't got no key.
Yeah. Hey, la-dee-daw, here I am with my key. Oh,
I have no key. I have no Bronx Award. I have no.
John, you packed your key.
Come,
no. Oh, Christ! You're the only person I know that doesn't have a Bronx Award. My cat has a Bronx Award. Your bus driver has the award, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
Vic got one when he retired.
Than the bus driver. What can I say?
All right. We will do this again probably in about 7 years at the rate we go.
Early,
but,
early 2016, the latest.
Yeah. All right. This was good. So I shall see you all whenever.
Have a good night.